Bulldog.
I have a leg injury and a foot injury right now.
A leg and a foot. Are they on the same
side of my body?
Side of your body?
Yes.
Okay.
Left.
What happened to you?
I got stung by a bee. And then I think I got stung by another bee.
Oh, come on.
I think I did.
Well, when did this happen?
Last night. Who knew?
It's Mike Shope.
Huh. Just never thought about getting stung by a bee at night.
I don't know.
But there would still be bees at night.
I guess.
That to sound like the flat earth thing. The bees just don't disappear when it gets dark.
Okay, but I've never seen one at night.
Well, it's dark.
And the bulldog.
Maybe they would not be out at night, but you disturbed it, so it came out and said, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, they weren't expecting me.
I'm in here trying to watch the Vietnam War on PBS.
Right.
And you're what are you doing sitting down in the chair? This is my time.
You are not supposed to.
Right.
This is our time.
Right.
That's what the bee said.
Right.
So, on behalf of the other bees.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Man, that's ancient too, right? That's a reference to a commercial with Ryan Miller in it on OLN. This is our time. That was the theme of the ad. Like, is this our year? It was like that. Something like that.
This is our time was a Bills slogan that I think maybe you might.
Is that right?
I think maybe that
those
was.
Ran together for me.
Yeah, I know.
The bumper stickers?
I think it's a little more recent than
okay.
the Miller.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Miller's was, is this the year?
Right.
And all he had different players saying that in that commercial on like
he was
versus.
Throwing tennis balls at a wall.
Was he?
In his, yeah.
Yeah.
Hand eye.
So, you know.
Yep.
It's a reference from the past that I'm not even sure I'm right about. I think you've corrected me, which is great. With us now is Will Graves, AP writer from Pittsburgh. How are you, Will?
I'm good, guys. How are y'all?
Pretty good. Aaron Rodgers is back. You might have predicted it. I think that was kind of the consensus expectation that he would be back. Were you personally... emotionally, psychologically ready for another go-round with Aaron Rodgers?
Look, as long as he doesn't go on certain sports shows and run his mouth about things not pertaining to football, he can stay as long as he wants. To be honest with you, like from a media standpoint, but more from a even more, you know, from the Steelers standpoint, that guy leaned into being here last year, you know, and everybody's wringing their hands. You know, because it was taking a little bit longer than maybe some anticipated. But the reality is that when he signed last June, right before mandatory minicamp, he said, I wouldn't make that decision until I knew I could be all in. And he was, to his credit, all in from the day that he signed until the day after the season ended with that first round playoff loss to the Texans. He was absolutely fully committed to being here, and that bought him a lot of equity in the locker room. And in the front office, it was just weird that, you know, Art Rooney II sort of made the mistake of trying to put him on a timeline, which, look, this guy's got a 20-plus year track record of doing whatever he wants, whenever the hell he wants, and he does not care about your expectations. So that was a little weird. But, look, in the end, you know, and there was a little bit of haggling over the money, but, look, what other job is he going to get the rest of his life that's going to pay him at least $15 million? Not that he needs the money. But like, that's the reality, too, right? Like, you know, he's not going to, you know, unless he takes over. Actually, I'm, you know what? There's some jokes there. I'm just going to leave there. I'm going to work and move on. I'm sorry. So who knows what this guy's going to do after football.
Yep.
But, you know, he did what he said he was going to do. He got here. The only thing that surprised me is that he got here for OTAs, which are voluntary. And he even said last year, you know, football in shorts in May is not his favorite thing, and he thought that maybe the refs would better be distributed to the younger players. But this time, reuniting with Mike McCarthy, one last run for the boys. He got here on time, and, I mean, he has been very active. I mean, I am sort of stunned at the amount of passing that his 42-year-old arm is doing in June. We're not even in June yet, in May. But he's been all in, and certainly – they certainly are leaning into sort of what they can out of him while he's still here.
What are the expectations, you know, either internally or within the fan base? Because, like, he was pretty good last year, right? Is that a fair assessment, or am I underselling it?
No, he was pretty good, though. I would say that sort of the returns diminished, A, late in the season,
yeah.
And B, when they played really good teams, right?
Right.
You know, he did have moments. I mean, you know, he won them, you know, basically, like, he won them a couple games down the stretch, which is what Aaron Rodgers does. And he was fine. I think the expectation is that this team wants to compete for a division title again and make the playoffs and, you know, hopefully get in there with a puncher's chance. You look at some of the moves they made in the offseason to give him better weapons. You know, they traded for Michael Pittman Jr. They signed Rico Dowdle after Kenny Gainwell was signed with the Bucs. They signed Jeremy Bernard, wide receiver out of they drafted him out of Georgia. You know, so there are more, maybe more downfield weapons than they had a year ago. He wasn't a great passer down the field last year, but maybe part of that is because most of the guys were, you know, if it was DK Metcalf, usually he had a lot of attention on him. So,
yeah.
You know, they're optimistic that they can be competitive, and sort of that is the blessing and the curse of sort of being the Steelers. They're sort of always going for it. They don't cycle up and cycle down. Like, they haven't. I mean, their last losing season was in 2003. And that's not – you guys know this. That's not normal. Like, they're the only team in the – like, I think they tied Dallas's record for longest consecutive non-losing seasons. The league isn't designed for that. They think they're special. They're special enough to go 10-7 and get whooped in the first round of the playoffs, and it's hard to imagine it ending any differently this time around. But this is what they're committed to, and at least, you know, like I say this a lot, the brand is the brand, and the brand for the Steelers is – to try to go forward even when maybe you don't have the talent or the depth to do it.
Yeah, it's been kind of a Groundhog Day existence, if that's not too obvious a cliche, to describe the Steelers the last few years. Maybe it would have been better. I mean, you're a writer. Maybe it would have been better for me to ask about Tomlin leaving and McCarthy than even Rodgers, as big a entity as Rodgers is in the league. What has that been like, life post Mike Tomlin so far?
It's very, very odd. You know, I kind of had a feeling, I can't remember when the last time I talked to you guys, if it was after the season or not, but the day after Christmas, I was at practice and I'm walking by Mike and we struck up a conversation and I just asked him how the Christmas was and how it's different now with his youngest is a just finished her sophomore year at Georgia. His boys are grown and out of the house. And I asked him what it was like having them come home for Christmas. And, you know, we had a very pleasant 5 minutes. And then I kind of walked down to watch the rest of practice. I turned to one of the other writers and I kind of relayed the gist of our conversation. And I was like, you know, there's nothing keeping him here. If he wants to leave, he can leave. And I will say that this was my 15th – last year was my 15th year covering the team. It was the first time I had a story ready in case he stepped down. I was a little surprised with the swiftness of it. But – you know, Mike, you know, for all of his detractors, that man can read the room better than anybody. And I think that he sensed that it was time for something else. And, you know, McCarthy, it's very, very different. I mean, from a covering the team standpoint, let me give you an example literally from today. So today was day 5 of OTAs, I think, for them. I'm not keeping track. I think it was day 5.
Mm-hmm.
And, Mike Tomlin hated talking to the media outside of his Tuesday windows and postgame. He hated doing it. It was not his, you know, like we were told, if you wanted him outside of those windows, be prepared for very curt answers and you better be very specific about what you need him for. He's the only coach in the league that was like that. McCarthy's like the exact opposite. Today he comes over and talks for 15 minutes and would have kept going if he had not been cut off by the great Bert Lawton, the PR chief for the Steelers. It's just way, I mean, you know, he makes the assistant coaches available on a regular basis because he wants to have a coaching tree and he wants, you know, fans and the media to have a better understanding of how things work. It is very, very different. You know, he even said today, there's not a lot of barking this time of year. There's not a lot of, you know, yelling at guys. There's not a lot of getting on guys. It's all about teaching and getting film. A couple of players have talked to me about how detailed the practices are, and I'm not saying that they weren't detailed under Mike. I would just say maybe the amount of detail is much higher than it had been under. That being said, I still, like, I was talking to Jalen Warren, the Steelers running back, today about this. I'm like, do you keep expecting him to, like, just hear his voice, Mike T's voice, just sort of crack out of the blue? Because that's what you would hear at practice when, you know, and it's, that part is very, very odd. And the irony is, because there's so much else going on with the team, with Rodgers coming back and then saying, you know, sort of out of the blue at the end of his time talking to us last week that this was going to be it for him, which we all kind of expected. I don't think none of us expected him to say it then, right? There's been so much going on with this team, like the the Mike Tomlin's absence, we haven't really had a chance to really dive into it yet. But I think, you know, especially once we get to training camp, I think it's going to be noticeable. And look, change is good sometimes. He's probably going to the Hall of Fame if he never coaches again, and I think he will. But it is just a very, very different vibe here than it was when Mike Tomlin was the head coach.
Where are you on how good of a coach McCarthy is? I felt like by the end of his Green Bay years, and this, of course, includes Rodgers, and, you know, our buddy Tyler Dunn wrote a big expose about all of that, which made it more surprising to me that this would have happened. But maybe I misread that. It's just like by the end of McCarthy in Green Bay and then in Dallas, he seemed like kind of a punchline. Maybe there was a lot of unfairness to that. I don't know. He's really never been my favorite.
I mean, like the idea that this guy is some bum off the street, which is, you know, how some of the fan base reacted, is a little weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
He and Tomlin's resumes are similar. I mean, look, if the Steelers went 12-5 3 years in a row, I think the fans would be like, this guy's a pretty good coach, right? Which is what he did in Dallas until the last year, which, by the way, they went 7-10 without Dak Prescott playing the second half of the year. Didn't buy with Cooper Rush and, you know, some other dudes you've never heard of, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a little unfair. I think he's won, right? I mean, the team I would expect the team to be competitive. Do I think they're the best team in the division? No, I don't. I mean, I firmly believe that Cincinnati is significantly better. And there's a chance, who knows with the Ravens, but I think the Ravens will probably be better too. But, I mean, he's a good coach. I mean, the part of the problem here is, like, if you live in Pittsburgh, if you cover the Steelers, look, this is, you know, like they lean into this being stability. They've obviously, no team has been, outside of the Patriots, has been more successful for the last 56 years than the Steelers, and even the Patriots run is sort of limited to one specific group, whereas mm-hmm. the Steelers have had separate runs of excellence. But you get sort of blinded to how the rest of the world lives. You guys have lived through it up there in Buffalo. I grew up in the D.C. suburbs. The football team there was great when I was a kid and then was trash for the next 30 years in a joke. And, you know, if the Bills had hired Mike McCarthy, if Washington hired Mike McCarthy, I think the fans would be like, oh, we got a guy that can win some football games, instead of being like, oh, my God. I mean, the irony is this guy's a Pittsburgh guy. The neighborhood he grew up in, you can literally see the Steelers practice field from the top of the hill in the neighborhood where Mike McCarthy grew up, right? Like, it's a homecoming, and I think that he understands this is his last job. And, you know, I think are there clock management issues, I guess, but I mean, you know, in this day and age, every coach gets nitpicked for their clock management. I mean, I get it. Mike Tomlin himself was hardly above reproach in that department. You know, it's weird. Like, you know, the Steelers have made their bones for. I mean, you know, Chuck Knoll was an unknown. Bill Cowher was largely an unknown. Mike Tomlin was definitely an unknown when they were hired, and this was pre-social media, right? And I would imagine, you know, I'd imagine those hires would have been if X and everybody else, all these everywhere else that existed then, it would have been met with what?
Who's this guy, right?
Where? And now and instead the Steelers have, for the first time in 50 some years, they hire a guy with a resume, and people are upset about it, which is weird to me. I mean, I think you could make the argument certainly that he is like, you know, the mirror image of Tomlin, one Super Bowl win, some spectacular regular seasons and some epic playoff flameouts. You know, but I do think the guy can coach. This is not going to be a disaster by any stretch.
Will Graves, Associated Press in Pittsburgh, on the beat with the Steelers on the Western Hotline with us for a couple of more minutes here. Will, how have both guys here that we've talked about, McCarthy and Rodgers, talked about their relationship and whether it ever was rocky, and whether this was an uncomfortable marriage of sorts at all for either side since they've been reunited in Pittsburgh? Or has that subject just not really come up?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, when Aaron was still in Green Bay, the first time McCarthy came in with the Cowboys in 21, you know, he was asked that week about you know, facing Mike, and Mike had been gone for a couple of years at that point. And he was very complimentary. And I think, you know, Aaron kind of at this point in his career sort of understood how good he had it back then. I mean, one of the reasons he's going to the Hall of Fame is because of Mike McCarthy, to be very, very clear. And I think that he understands and respects that. I think they like to butt heads, but I mean, Aaron would like that no matter who his coach. I mean, he just sort of loves to be himself. So, you know, I think that, you know, they're going to be fine. I mean, will there be rough patches? I mean, maybe, but it's going to be more results-based than just the fact that these guys can't stand each other. Like, that's certainly not the case. I think that they're both sort of happy to have this, you know, one last moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the real question with the Steelers is, like, you know, what do they do behind him, behind Aaron Rodgers? And you've got, you know, Mason Rudolph, you know, a veteran. You kind of know what you got in him. They got Will Howard, the kid from Ohio State, who was basically hurt most of last year. And then they drafted Drew Aller out of Penn State. The question is, what do you do at the end of the preseason? My guess is the smart thing for the Steelers to do would be to, like, I imagine some other team somewhere will have injury issues, a quarterback, and you could trade maybe you could flip Mason Rudolph for, like, a seventh rounder, right? And then two things happen. One of two things happen this year if you keep the kids behind Rodgers. Either Aaron stays healthy and the team is good, or Aaron gets hurt, which I think is the more likely scenario, and you finally find out if either of these two guys can play, and then you get to next year's draft, and maybe you can finally, after five years after Ben Roethlisberger retired, and probably 8 years after they should have planned for yes. his succession, maybe you finally find the guy that can be the guy for the next 10 to 15 years.
Never too late, I guess. The Steelers, by the way, as you may know, the team that the Packers beat Rodgers and McCarthy's one Super Bowl win. I mean, interesting that Rodgers has just the one, but that was against Pittsburgh in February of 11. Will, I was hoping that there would be, and thinking of the Bills, too, with their coaching change after, what, 9 years of Sean mm-hmm. McDermott? Here are Tomlin and John Harbaugh, who doubled that, both out in their respective cases. I was kind of hoping for a Pittsburgh-Baltimore game, well, before Christmas. Even maybe early, so you could sort of have the storyline of the two teams. So is it the record for most head-to-head meetings for coaches, Tomlin and Harbaugh?
I mean, they were second behind Hallis and Curly Lambeau. They were second.
Okay, thank you. So that's not going to happen. I don't think it's Christmas, but they play week 15 is their first meeting, the Ravens and the Steelers. I mean, I don't know what this is as a question. It's just so interesting that this happened to the two teams, and I guess the Bills also at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can get it was a very jarring, you know, stretch there postseason. I mean, it's crazy how, like, one missed kick,
yeah,
you know, altered the trajectory. I mean, if that kid makes that kick in week 18, Harbaugh's probably still the coach of the Ravens, you know, and if they miss it, maybe Mike says, I'm not going out without reaching the playoffs, I'm going to come back for one more year. Like, I literally think that could have happened, especially because he was literally tied with Chuck Knoll for most wins all time in franchise history, right? Which is just like a staggering, staggering hall of, you know, Mount Rushmore. I mean, that is a career-defining thing if he would have slipped past Chuck. So, but that's, you know, the Steelers sort of have insulated themselves from a lot of this change. They, like I mentioned earlier, they sort of pride themselves on it. But look, you know, Father Time is undefeated. Eventually the Turk comes for us all. And, you know, I think it will be, you know, I think this year is, we're not going to really get a really true post Mike Tomlin type feel for this team until the Steelers find that quarterback. I really think that what we're going to see next year is going to be a team that's going to be done. You know, the defense is going to, you know, the TJ Watts of the world and the Cam Haywards of the world are going to have to be excellent and have to carry the team maybe probably early in the season. And then, you know, you'll have Aaron Rodgers kind of back there to maybe trying to find a little bit of magic. But I really think the identity of this franchise is not going to what it's going to look like. You know, it's going to be sort of like a one-off Tomlin light almost in a weird way this year from a results standpoint. And then I think next year, in 27, we're going to have a much better feel for what the Mike McCarthy era in Pittsburgh is going to be.
Well, you mentioned Hayward and Watt, two cornerstone players on that defense. How capable at this point in their careers of carrying anything do you think they are? And is everything finally sort of calm and cool on the Watt front? Like, there was every year there was like, you know, oh, this guy got paid, and he's in line. Like, is that all in the past now?
Well, I mean, yeah, because the irony is I think TJ's probably considers himself pretty fortunate to get the paycheck that he's making. I mean, I think there was some concern late in the year. There was a production drop off. It's the guy's 20 years younger than I am. To say that he's sort of like on the wrong side of 30 is kind of a jerk. makes me kind of a jag off to borrow a Pittsburghese. But he certainly looked like he has lost a fraction of a step, right? I think they have new defensive coordinator Patrick Graham. I think his job is going to be to find ways to free TJ up, because for most of TJ's career, it's like just line him up there on the left side, let him do his thing, and good luck to whoever the right tackle and whoever happens to be the quarterback, right? Like, that was literally their plan. And now I think you're going to see him moving around a lot more and justifying the fact that he was, you know, is still one of the highest paid non-quarterbacks in the league. Cam Hayward, I don't want to say he can play forever, but man, it certainly looks like, you know, he can play. This will be his 16th season. There are every once in a while, Calais Campbell's one of those guys, right? You'll find some interior defensive lineman that can kind of just stick around forever. Cam certainly looks to be that guy, a lifelong Steeler. I also think Cam's thinking about the Hall of Fame, and I think that he thinks that he can make it, you know, another couple years and get another All-Pro, but another second-team All-Pro, another Pro Bowl nod in his late 30s. He thinks that's going to bolster his resume. And I do think he does want the team to, you know, win a Super Bowl or at least get to one while he's here. And I don't see that happening. I think that they're pretty good. But I think, like, we've seen in that Houston game last year, I mean, it's essentially the same team coming back, different head coach, but a lot of familiar faces outside of, as I mentioned, Michael Pittman and and a couple of others. Hard to imagine a different result. But, I do think that, those guys can be effective. Staying healthy is going to be key for them, especially for TJ. And this problem the Steelers have now is, like, Nick Herbig, who's been a bit of a great find for them, finishing his third year, now eligible for a new contract because he was a third-round pick. So, you know, he's entering his fourth season. So his contract expires after this year. He certainly looks like the 3.0 version of TJ Watt. He's not a future Hall of Famer, but he can be a very, very effective pass rusher. The Steelers got to figure out how much they want to pay him, and can they afford to pay him and Alex Highsmith and TJ Watt a lot of money? One of those guys you would sit there and think would be the odd man out. I think TJ's salary makes him sort of untouchable. If the Steelers get a call for Alex Highsmith, who is a really, really solid pro, and the price is right, could they make a move? I think it's possible. They have Jack Sawyer, you know, from Ohio State that they drafted last year, who is not a get to the quarterback all the time kind of guy, but it can definitely be a set the edge, a slightly lesser version of Alex Highsmith. So that's sort of the question that they really have. How much are they willing to pay a premium? How much of a premium are they willing to pay to have as many disruptive guys there on the edge as possible? And I just wonder in this day and age with the economics of the league, if that's possible to carry three guys that are probably, you know, Highsmith's making in the 20s, TJ's is up in the 30s, and I imagine Herbig would be pretty close to $20 million at this point a year if he gets a new deal. That's a lot of money for a very specific skill set.
Will Graves of the AP in Pittsburgh. Thanks for your time, Will. Hope to talk to you again when we get close to the season. The Bills and Steelers will not face each other this regular season, so we'll have to try to jam that in if you're up for it.
All right, shout out to the great John Warrow. See you guys later.
There it is. Thanks, Will. also out of Pittsburgh today, a pithy take from Andrew Filippone, if you didn't.
That's not his style at all.
Yeah, a thought provoker. He says, why, once people become adults, do they stop eating fruit snacks? Like little gummies, little fish, that sort of thing, like little bags of fruit snacks.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. He said he loves them. He just crushed his daughter's bag of fruit snacks, well, I believe is maybe what he put it.
I mostly stopped eating stuff that I knew the kids needed as strong, but wanted, that was there for them. And that's how I would wean myself off of eating fruit snacks. It's like, there's only this many left and I don't want to run to the store to get more. And so I'm just,
then I can eat the dad food.
I am thinking of myself here. I don't need to shop if I preserve this stuff for them. So that's mostly what I do.
if I leave the fruit snacks for my young children, they won't eat the summer sausage that I have hidden in the pantry.
Or drink my beer.
Hopefully.
Which is, let's just make know, an, really or, what it's really
right.
all about.
Let's just sort of implicitly, we know what to do here.
Yeah. Daddy's fruit snack comes in a can.
Yes. Well, we'll have to get back to Andrew.
I'm still like that even to this day with like orange, like any kind of juice. The kids want juice. They always want to do the little sippy cups, whatever, right? My wife would sort of dilute it with like seltzer water or something so it wasn't just straight sugary juice, but, you know, to wean it. But there's not that much juice left. I guess I don't drink juice anymore.
Yeah.
As a dad, that was a sacrifice I was willing to make.
You just have to buy it and put a big sticker on it. You know, dad.
Right, yep.
Hands off.
Oh, I hide stuff all the time. It rarely works.
Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here at 803-0550. This is WGR.
You can always have wingers that you can't move into center, but you can have centers that you can always move to the wing. And you look around the league, that like center depth. If you have center depth, you're in a real good place. There's a lot of teams that are screaming, boy, we need a third-line centerman. We need a second-line centerman. We could take a Kulik. You could move him to the wing. Tomer could easily go back to the wing. You could take Helenius, and he could go to the right side. He doesn't necessarily have to play in the middle. Taking a center and pushing him outside is a great problem to have, and I think anytime you can have the depth we have, it's a great problem to have.
Lindy Ruff earlier today heard on WGR appearing on Sabres Live. Always a pleasure to talk to Will Graves. The Steelers over-under is 8.5, which why wouldn't it be just right down the middle?
Right.
And a little bit of a lean to the under on the markets, minus 120. I made an under bet the other night.
Oh, yeah?
Which I did during our episode of ADP Chasing when the guys were talking about the Bucks a little bit. Bucky Irving, running back. Todd Bowles said, should be ready by summer or fall. Like, or fall.
Well, yeah, what do you mean?
Big difference.
What do you mean, or fall?
What is that supposed to mean? You're not even sure?
We're going by the calendar. Fall is like the third week of September.
Fall is games.
You've got some games that have been played already, buddy.
What are you telling us?
Yeah.
And one of the guys was kind of not super high on their rookie receiver, Ted Hurst. Evans is gone. Mayfield had a tough year last year. And I like, relatively speaking, I like the rest of the division a little bit. I mean, 8-9 won the NFC South last year, so I don't want to say I love it. But I'm really curious about Atlanta with Stefanski and Tua there because there are good players in Atlanta, offense and defense. I think New Orleans is a little bit of a stylish dark horse right now. Tyler Shuck wasn't terrible. Kellen Moore, right? Kellen Moore. Etienne is there now. Olave, they drafted a receiver in the first round. Tyson. So there are things to like about the Saints, at least on offense. And then Carolina, I don't know. They did win that thing. And they did push the Rams in the playoff game.
They did.
Twice, actually, but in the playoff game, too, they gave the Rams a great game. So, I don't know. Bryce Young is really tough.
That's a hard one, isn't it? It's been all, for a 101, it's been just all over the road. It looked pretty, maybe early on, like, oh my God, this is a disaster. Then it looked, oh.
And they benched him.
Yeah, right. For Andy Dalton. And then it kind of looked like, oh, he's actually really good and we're all set. And I don't know if it ever got back to he should be benched, but it certainly didn't feel to me like it was all set anymore. Like he still doesn't have a big extension, right?
I don't know.
I think they're on to, like, I assume they picked up a fifth year on him. If they could do that, then we should be there already. He's 3 years in.
This is year four, right?
This is year four. So that should have happened this year. I can't remember when and if it did. But I know that's a hard one. Like this might be a really important year for them and him to decide whether they want to keep going or not. Because I boy, I think I would remember if there was news about a contract, which I assume has not happened for him. But the fifth year would be reasonable for them, I think, to pick up.
Last year, he started every game but the game against the Bills. And Dalton got that one, Young. Yeah, I've read on him that there are these spikes. And, you know, even eye test-wise, he ran. I mean, there were some really good moments for him. But every other metric is terrible. Like, it's just not even the least bit promising on him. He would be a really tricky one for us to talk about every day.
Yep.
Like, what do you want to do here? The fact that they won that division makes it easy to back him. And then the other guy says, well, they had a losing record. And you could just, you find yourself in a loop with that one. Well, they won the division, but they had a losing record. Like, why do I need to care about how good Atlanta, New Orleans, and Tampa were? Because that's who you're playing. That's who you're trying. You just sort of go round and round on that.
Mm-hmm.
The bet I made was on the Bucks under, because I think it's a little bit ominous. I don't know. Todd Bowles, he's been there a while now. The other teams have new coaches in the last couple of years, or this year in the case of Atlanta. I think the Bucks thing, I want to say, is a little bit tired. So I went under. Their number is 8.5, too. I went under 7.5 for a little bit extra money.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this means they have my money until January. Best case.
That is what it means.
I get paid in January.
Right.
Which I don't like.
Yeah.
6 months.
It's a long time.
Then I thought about that, looked at the cash out, and it's 10% less. If I want to take it back, it'll cost me 10% of the bet, which I'm not doing that either.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
It's lose-lose, you know?
Yeah.
Hopefully it ends up lose-lose-win.
Right.
It's lose-lose. If I took it back, I'd be out 10%. For now, if I leave it in, how much interest am I foregoing in the next 7 months?
Depends how big that amount of money was, I guess.
Five units.
Okay.
$100.
That's considerable. Young is, by the way, they did exercise the fifth-year option. Not that there was a lot of question about it, but $27 million next year. So this year, year four of the rookie deal, pretty modest cap. Next year, $27 million. Obviously, they have time to decide whether they want to make a big, long $50 million a year or more commitment to him.
Okay. When I make a futures bet, it has to be sizable.
Yeah,
I've had a couple where like I won it and it was like $20. I'm like, why did I even bother to do this?
Right, yeah.
I'm too good for this. That was supposed to be funny.
I agree.
That was supposed to be funny.
You are too good for it.
But you know, like a futures bet, when I was winning on those baseball ones, that would be like several hundred bucks each. Just like, all right, if I'm going to do this, I want to care about it. I want to be invested.
Yeah.
And I want it to matter if I win. I want it to, you know, mean something.
Sure. Yeah.
Here's George with us. Hi, George.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. A quick thing on Tuck is that I think if we remove the player's name, I don't know how many people would actually be on board for that potential contract. Of course, none of us really know what that contract is, but I'm not so sure we would all be on board with a 7 year, $9+ million contract for a 30-year-old. So I think playing a game of chicken might be interesting, letting him test the market a bit and then see where that goes. I think someone's going to pay him a lot of money it's not going to be worth it. And a quick aside, Mike, is yesterday I think I heard you talk about Frank Thomas's birthday.
Yes.
And you alluded to a sports card, and I'm a big sports card fan. I remember as a kid, that Leaf card was you're like a millionaire if you could have pulled that card. I'm sure you remember that card, but it was, I can't tell you how many packs I opened of that, and it was a really difficult card to get. That card will always have a special place, in my heart, for sure. And I called you maybe about 3 or 4 months ago, and sorry, I know this is totally off topic, but were you going to ever bring back that sports card show? Or
no, I'm not. Thanks, George. I'm not as active or therefore knowledgeable about it like I used to be. Back in those days, I was buying and buying and trading, and I was immersed in it. And that changed for me at a certain point, and soon after that is when I'm like, I don't really think I should be doing this anymore because I had run out of things to say, basically. I am playing around with my stuff a little bit now again, but I'm not really buying anything. I'm just sort of
taking stock.
Yeah. Like last night.
Pondering moves.
Who has more fun than people? Last night, I sat with my 85 baseball set.
tops, 85 tops, and just was looking, just kind of admiring how attractive that card was. And it's a Puckett rookie, Roger Clemens, McGuire from the U.S. Olympic team, mm-hmm. Strawberry mm-hmm. with the first overall draft pick card. Just fresh in my mind because I literally did this last night. So, no, the Leaf card is the one I have. It's not, you know, big like that anymore if it was at the time. I don't remember. 1990. That would have been the card of the day. Then I got home.
No,
just
card.
Didn't.
Yeah, just didn't.
Bulldog, just
follow,
didn't.
Just didn't follow through.
I don't think there will be a game of chicken with Alex Tuch. I think, from what it sounds like, if the Sabres, and this to me would be okay, I mean, I'm not sitting here begging for them to sign him. If it gets to July 1, is it not over?
I can't imagine it coming back if it gets to July 1.
You know, I think suitors.
The whatever separation there is on what they want the money to be, once the eighth year option is gone from the Sabres, I just think they have no way to be competitive. Like if they want to keep, which is, you know, I respect them wanting to keep the AAV down. They've got a whole team to keep building and keep paying guys and contending, and the cap going up only does so much for you. Like, they're in a pinch already here. So, and they're just kind of getting started. Thankfully, they've got most of their big young core locked up. Benson is a big one this offseason, but there's not horrible or a horrible amount of urgency there or an awful lot of urgency there, unless you're worried about an offer sheet, which maybe you should be. I don't know. I tend to just not think that that's something that's going to happen because it just so rarely happens in the sport. So, but all that said, yeah, there's a finite amount of money, and I think the eighth year. That's why I bothered to even mention it earlier. Like that is one advantage they have. If we're talking about the lump sum of the total value of the contract, the Sabres can match what a team does in 7 years with an eighth year and maybe get to their number. But we'll see. I mean, Tuck has to be cooperative about that, and if he's not, I think he's going to get an offer out there from somewhere that will definitely meet his standards. I think he is the number one free agent on the market. You know, unless you want to say Sergei Bobrovsky is, he's a goalie, whatever. As far as skaters go, it's Tuch. And someone else will say, we're hoping for 4 good years, here's 7. And we'll deal with the fallout when it comes. So I think if it gets to July 1, he's a goner. I'd be very surprised if they are able to reel that back in from there.
Thanks again, George. Paul Hamilton joins us in less than 20 minutes. We'll discuss that and more in terms of the Sabres with Paul. Lines are open for your calls next. This is Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.